very good Monday. Welcome to today's edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you national and regional agricultural news headlines. And I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture Fertilizer Research and Education Program is announcing 4 vacancies on the Fertilizer Inspection Advisory Board's Technical Advisory Subcommittee. The subcommittee serves as an expert scientific panel on matters concerning efficient use of fertilizing materials and irrigation water. Members assist in setting research priorities for the grant program, as well as review and recommending research and outreach proposals for funding and advising on grant activities. The grant funds and facilitates research, education, and demonstration projects to improve proper use of fertilizing materials and irrigation water in agriculture. The program serves researchers, growers, agricultural supply and service professionals, extension personnel, public agencies, consultants, and the public. The subcommittee applicants must demonstrate technical, applied, and scientific expertise in the fields of agronomy, soil science, plant science, production agriculture, or environmental issues related to the use of fertilizers and irrigation water in California. The term of the office for subcommittee members is 3 years. Members receive no compensation, but are entitled to reimbursement and necessary travel expenses in accordance with the rules of the California Department of Human Resources. Individuals interested in being considered for an appointment should complete an application packet, and you can find more information on the CDFA website. The application deadline is July 31st. Wildfires that raged across California over the past several years have devastated farms. After the flames were extinguished, the threat of wildfires continued to cost farmers in other ways, as farmers in parts of the state saw premiums on their property insurance policies rise exponentially. Last week, the California State Senate passed legislation that seeks to increase affordable insurance options for farms exposed to wildfire risk. Senate Bill 505, sponsored by the California Farm Bureau, now moves to the State Assembly. The U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Service Agency is making $250 million available to rice growers who lost production acreage in 2022. USDA began sending pre-filled applications to rice producers who may want to seek aid. Funds are provided through the new Rice Production Program, which will consider assistance to farmers based on 2022 planted and prevented planted rice acreage. Growers who derive 75% or more of their average adjusted gross income from farming can qualify for payments of up to $250,000. Disease is bound to affect any industry that involves plants. One of the most dramatic instances in the 20th century was the destruction of the popular Gross Michael or Big Mike banana variety by Fusarium wilt. The banana industry is working urgently to make sure that history won't repeat itself with Big Mike's replacement, which is the Cavendish. So far in this century, the most dramatic shock to any domestic fruit or vegetable industry has been to U.S. citrus production, which has declined by 80% since the turn of the century, according to a report issued by the American Farm Bureau Foundation economist Daniel Munch. The decline is primarily due to the drop in Florida citrus production caused by citrus greening, although adverse weather such as hurricanes and urbanization have also played their part. The drop has been especially sharp since the initial detection of citrus greening in Florida in 2005. Since then, Munch writes, orange production in Florida has dropped 90% from 150 million boxes to a mere 16 million boxes expected in 2023. Between 2002 and 2017, the number of citrus growers in Florida decreased from 7,389 to 2,775. That is a 62% decline. And the number of juice processing facilities decreased from 41 in 2003 to 14 in 2017. That is a 66% decline. The plunge has especially hit the orange juice industry, which uses 87% of Florida's citrus output. Citrus fruits not commonly grown in Florida have not faced the same domestic output declines, according to Munch. Lemon production, exclusive to California and Arizona, has hovered between 20 million and 30 million boxes since the 1980s. Only because of the decline of orange and grapefruit production have lemons made up a larger share of citrus produced. The only citrus fruit category to show a clear increase in production is the tangerine category, which includes tangelos, mandarins, clementines, and traditional tangerines. Successful marketing campaigns showcasing easy-peel seedless options in small handheld sizes have boosted the share of fresh consumption of tangerines to over 40% of the fresh orange tangerine market, compared to under 20% in 2000. In 2016, California outstripped Florida in citrus production for the first time. So far, the California citrus industry has managed to stave off Wana Longbing in the San Joaquin Valley, where the bulk of production takes place. The decline in citrus acreage has diminished the U.S. market share of world citrus production, which stood at 50% in 1970 and is expected to be down to 5% in 2023. Brazil, China, and nations in the European Union account for much of the uptake. At this point, the Florida citrus industry is seriously endangered, as evidenced by a recent proposal advanced in Congress to protect the state's citrus acreage. Much of America's salad bowl is still underwater after a series of atmospheric river-fueled storms hit California over the winter. And even now, with the snowmelt, tomato farmers can't seem to get their fields dry. Round after round of flooding rain from atmospheric river storms pounded California farms this winter. Now in a dry season, warm weather is melting a record snowpack, flooding farms again. Round after round of flooding rain from atmospheric river storms pounded California farms this winter. Now in a dry season, warm weather is melting the record snowpack, flooding farms again. Satellite images show a lake drained for agricultural land reappearing in a central valley. At the height of the growing season, California produces an average of 2 billion tomatoes a week, according to the California Tomato Growers Association. Every week, farmers usually fill 40,000 trucks, each carrying about 300,000 tomatoes or 500,000 pounds. Full Harvest, a company battling against food waste, has announced its expansion beyond surplus to all USDA Grade 1 produce and its online marketplace for commercial buyers and sellers. Solving the food waste problem faster by bringing the entire produce market online for more efficiencies, the addition expands its reach to retailers, food service companies, and direct-to-consumer distributors, among others. According to the company, Full Harvest is now the leading end-to-end online produce marketplace, including logistics automation for all grades of produce, from USDA Grade 1 to surplus and imperfect, on spot, program, and contract terms. Globally, an estimated $2.5 billion, or 40% of food grown, goes to waste each year, according to the World Wildlife Federation. Unfortunately, while agriculture and food-related industries contribute more than $1.2 trillion to the U.S. GDP, and the fruit and vegetable market size alone will top $96 billion this year, the produce industry is predominantly offline. The lack of accurate data and operational transparency caused by offline inefficiencies exacerbate the food waste problem. Having already helped growers sell over 85 million pounds of surplus and imperfect produce to date, Full Harvest is leveraging its marketplace, previously only for excess produce, now to digitize the entire produce supply chain and provide valuable data and insights, which is critical to solve the food waste problem. Full Harvest enables increased market matching and transparency that quickly improves bottom lines, shortens the time from harvest to production by shipping direct from farms, and reduces the carbon footprint associated with transporting produce. USDA Grade 1 is the primary produce grade used in the food industry to ensure consistent cosmetic and quality standards for consumers. Produce must meet stringent guidelines on shape, color, size, texture, and quality to be considered USDA Grade 1. Expanding Full Harvest marketplace to include USDA Grade 1 gives its current buyers and suppliers, most of which buy and sell grades of all produce, a one-stop shop to manage their produce online, saving them time and money while still providing access to sustainable options. While Full Harvest has an extensive grower network established, additional suppliers are invited to learn more about the marketplace and sign up at fullharvest.com/farms. Full Harvest says they are solving the $2.6 trillion food waste problem through technology and innovation. The company runs a first business-to-business online marketplace that connects farmers with commercial produce buyers to purchase produce of all grades, including USDA Grade 1, surplus, and imperfect produce.
Don't miss your opportunity to attend the only event of its kind taking place this summer. Join us on June 21st, 2023 in Modesto, California for the Crop Consultant Connect event. The Crop Consultant Connect event will bring you and many of your independent crop consultant peers together. You'll also get access to virtual CE hours as an exclusive thank you for attending this event. Your registration includes breakfast, lunch, coffee, snacks, as well as a wealth of information you're able to glean from this experience. Please visit progressivecrop.com for more information. Join us on June 21st in Modesto, California for the Crop Consultant Connect event.
Removing and replanting an almond orchard can be one of the most difficult decisions a grower can make. Besides old age, the decision comes down to the overall health of the orchard and where it's trending, which of course can be caused by a variety of ailments.
Is it a plateau on the yield year to year? Is it a slight decrease? And then if it's a slight decrease, what are the potential reasons for that, right? I know plenty of growers who had very old orchards that were still producing well, but the main issue they were having was they didn't shake well because they were getting too big, even though the yield was still there. But most of the time, there's some level of decline.
That was Cameron Zuber, who's an orchard crops farm advisor in Madera and Merced counties with University of California Cooperative Extension. At the point of realizing orchard decline, Zuber said, the question then becomes about the cause of decline and whether it can be remediated now with minimal inputs. Determining exactly the cause of decline could not be more important in a life or death scenario of the orchard.
So if you're dealing with common replant diseases, let's take nematodes, while there might be solutions to manage for that pest now, the cost of it may not necessarily make the most sense, especially dependent on yield, right? Placing these costs money and time for it to get up to being profitable and helpful. So along with that goes into the input costs, which can be variable year to year, but depending on what crop you're growing, tree nuts or fruits, and which ones and where you are, those input costs can also be a determining factor, even though your yields might still be the same or increasing. So those you may not have a lot of control over, but it is a part of the math that at least some growers think about.
Zuber puts almond replant issues into four categories.
Physical and chemical factors, or sometimes called abiotic. And these are typically ones attributed to like non-biological reasons or organisms. So they can be things like salinity buildup, an existing high or low pH that the grower may or may not already be aware of, hard pans that may not have been addressed, variable soils, degrading soil properties that make infiltration an issue and other stuff like that. So again, I'm not talking about like, you know, nematodes and critters. It's more like abiotic and chemical factors. The second category, aggressive pathogens, which feeds into the other two, is biological organisms. So they could be ones that typically, in a replant example, these are ones that will continue to persist, right? So they could be anything from like verticillium wilt or stuff like that. However, from that aggressive pathogen category, I tend to pull out plant parasitic nematodes and Prunus replant disease into their own, because those tend to be the main ones most growers are concerned about. So that's where there's a lot of information and things that I can help them with. So with plant parasitic nematodes, and I do want to pause and say there are many types of nematodes. These are ones that are detrimental to plants. Just because there are nematodes doesn't mean they're bad. It's all about context. But for plant parasitic ones, there's various kinds, right? And which ones those are and which ones you have is very much can inform what you can do about it. And then Prunus replant disease, which we might talk on further, is kind of related to it, as it is also some sort of soil pathogenic complex that can impact the overall tree growth. And why we care about them and why we want to manage about them is because they impact the growth of your trees, which then can impact your yield. And that could just be not just killing them, but also just reducing their overall vigor. So those are the primary, the four categories: physical and chemical factors, aggressive pathogens, plant parasitic nematodes, and Prunus replant disease.
Zuber offered some final words of wisdom when thinking about replanting.
Take the time when you don't have it. Flipping an orchard into another orchard is a lot of time, it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of stress. And it's tough to think about problems you're not thinking about. And it just takes a little time and think about what you can do in a short amount of time to just get you thinking about it. And that's why I tend to recommend satellite images, because it's easy, it's fast, it's cheap, and it gives you kind of that spatial view and overview of the overall site. So I can't speak to every individual, but figure out what you can do to kind of like think about how much time you might have to dedicate towards potential problems and replant issues that you may not necessarily have thought about. Because it's, while there are potential solutions after planting, sometimes it's best to deal with it when you're actually replanting that orchard.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Stakeholders in two new rural clean energy programs were in attendance for the formal announcement ceremony recently at the White House. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
At the White House Tuesday, formal celebration of two new USDA-led clean rural energy programs.
The official announcement of the Powering Affordable Clean Energy and Empowering Rural America programs, or as we like to call them, PACE and New Era.
USDA Rural Development Rural Utility Service Administrator Andy Burke noted the various stakeholders in these programs in attendance, including
co-op executives, electric utility trailblazers, tribal leaders, labor leaders, community voices, and clean energy advocates. Each of you truly makes a difference in rural America every single day.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack added the importance utilities and utility cooperatives play in rural America daily, and will play in advancing clean energy development efforts.
You folks are not only the providers of energy, but you're also at the front and center of every economic development project in the communities that you serve.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The Global Coalition of Fresh Produce recently called on national and international policymakers to implement measures to safeguard the supply of affordable and safe fruits and vegetables worldwide. The coalition also sought to ensure the viability of the fruit and vegetable industry. The coalition made the request in a report titled Global Value Chains for Fresh Produce, an Urgent Call for Policy Measures. The report was a collaborative effort involving fresh produce associations from around the world. The North American Trade Working Group is a member and authorized the report. The Department of Agriculture released a dashboard demonstrating the scope of Black Sea grain and oilseed trade. USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service says millions of tons of grain are shipped through the region annually, making the Black Sea region a major supplier of agricultural commodities worldwide. The dashboard demonstrates the impacts the Black Sea trade disruption can have on food access in various countries. The analysis focuses on key commodities, including barley, corn, soybean oil, sunflower seed oil, and wheat. For each country, the largest suppliers are shown, which allows the dashboard to illustrate the potential impact of Russia's war in the Ukraine. The dashboard is available at fas.usda.gov. A key farm state senator says President Joe Biden may be using the Farm Bill as a vehicle to push back on broader GOP plans to expand food stamp work requirements, even as farm safety net funding remains in doubt. So which is it? Fear of a U.S. debt default or GOP expanding SNAP work requirements? That prompted Biden to invite Ag Committee leaders to the White House last week for Farm Bill talks. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
I think it would be the latter, and also to start the conversation, but I think it's more geared towards the 84% of the Farm Bill that is for nutrition.
Grassley says he is not 100% sure, as he was not a part of the meeting last week. Retail fertilizer prices moved in opposite directions for the second week of May, according to sellers that were surveyed by DTN. Half of the fertilizers are higher compared to last month, while the other half is lower. One fertilizer is considerably higher and another is notably lower. Urea was 6% higher compared to last month. The nitrogen fertilizer had an average price of $664 a ton, back above the $600 a ton after 1 week of being below that level for the first time in a year and a half. Slightly higher was DAP, MAP, and UAN-32, looking back to the prior month. DAP had an average price of $828 a ton, MAP at $826 a ton, and UAN-32 at $517 a ton. Leading fertilizer prices lower was anhydrous. The nitrogen fertilizer was 9% less expensive compared to last month, and it had an average price of $910 a ton.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.